Good evening. Welcome to the Salyer Report. Today is Thursday, March 15th, 2018. It's the Ides of March. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, at last, I'm so happy to announce the new Salyer website will be up tomorrow. We're going to send out an update in the morning, and that will invite you to come into salyer.com, and what you'll find is a splash page. That's an entry page, and there are two doors, one for the public site and one for the members-only site. If you, before you click on members-only, there will be a link for you to get a new password. So click on the link, go get the new password, then come back to the splash page at salyer.com, click on the members door, and put in your username and password, and it will take you right in. Now, what you're going to find is the Phase 1 website, so the homepage and the last year of content. Once we're confident that Phase 1 is 2, we're going to add the library, which is the full archive of all content since 2007. So there'll be plenty there, and we hope to have that up probably by the end of the month. So it depends on how well Phase 1 goes and what your customer needs are, customer service needs. Anyway, so we love the new website. We hope you love it as much as we do, and we welcome your feedbacks and comments. We're going to be much more dynamic. Now that our whole team is working on one site and not the other, we can evolve it and improve it. It's going to be these things are never over. So we're hoping, we have a lot of great plans for this website, so we hope you love it. Heads up on events. I'm going to be doing money and markets next week from Mexico City. I'm down there for an award ceremony. I'll tell you all about it when we talk next week. Then it turns out we've had two cancellations of couples on our May 13th to 17th group in Uluru. So we have four spots open. I know it's not a lot of notice, but there are 2 months until you can fly down to Sydney and or Melbourne, and then up to Uluru. It's a fabulous group. So, and as I said before, it's an unbelievably life-changing event. So if you go to events on the new and improved Salyer website, there's more information. You can click on that May 13th to 17th trip and access the brochure and all sorts of information. And if you're interested, just email us at customerservice.com and let us know what your questions, what you need. We'd be happy to help. But again, four spots in the May 13th to 17th trip to Uluru. June 2nd, I'm coming back. I'll leave Australia on May 18th and go to New Zealand for 2 weeks. And then I come back through San Francisco. We're organizing a lunch in San Francisco on June 2nd, so hold that date if you're interested and in the area. In July, I'm going to be in Eastern Europe, both in Sofia and Bucharest. So anybody there who's interested in lunch or dinner, let me know, and we'll see what we can do. And then August, I'm going to be in Western Europe. I'll be in Germany, Switzerland, France, the Netherlands. I hope to also get over to Vienna. And, of course, then in October, I'm coming back to Italy. So again, there's going to be a conference in Italy, so you can also sign up for that. Scientists for Peace. Our theme tonight is batten down the hatches because the geopolitical and financial storms are rising. Senator Rand Paul wrote a great piece called "It's Time for a New American Foreign Policy." In part, this is connected to his reaction to the announcement of the proposal that Pompeo move over as Secretary of State, and they move up a career CIA covert operator who's been deputy up into the CIA, DCIA spot. Anyway, I put the full article in my notes. It's also linked in Geopolitics in the under News Trends and Stories in the website, so you can find it there as well. Again, Senator Rand Paul, "It's Time for a New American Foreign Policy." And basically what he's saying is he's rejecting the neocon strategy. And, of course, every day Trump looks more and more now like he's building a war cabinet and falling into the what I call the neocon nightmare. Part of what is going on is you have, coming out of the fiscal crisis and the financial coup d'etat, you had massive financial liquidity kept going with very aggressive monetary policy, the quantitative easings plus rising debt, particularly in the emerging markets. If you go back and look at our planet debt study that we did in 2016, we talk all about that. But now with tremendous debt loads and rising interest rates, which of course make that debt much more expensive or untenable, you have trade wars going on and war as people fight over cash flows and credit and resources. And the combination is a dangerous cocktail. And of course, you throw the neocons in the middle of it, and it really gets bad. It's all like a scene from the movie The International. If you haven't seen that, it was one of the first movies we ever reviewed in Let's Go to the Movies, because I think it's such a great commentary on global debt and war and our financial addiction to global debt and war. But if you haven't seen The International, it's very informative about what's going on. Anyway, but what you've got is you've got a fight for cash flow, a fight for turf. And as interest rates rise and banks have to compete for deposits, there's a squeeze. And among other things, it's a squeeze on government budgets. And the more they've taken out debt, the more they need dollars to pay their debt, the worse the squeeze gets. And it's one of the reasons that the administration and Congress made such a push to repatriate as much cash. They're trying to bring the blood back to the brain and the lungs and get it out of the what is for them the fingers and the toes. Anyway, competition is turning nasty. We have trade wars. Of course, the president announced tariffs on steel and aluminum and then sort of accepted a whole bunch of people from it, basically Canada being the big one. China now produces almost 50% of the global steel capacity. The U.S. has dropped tremendously. But in fact, if you know, the issue that Trump said is it's national security, basically said if you have no steel, you have no country. And the question, of course, is, if the economics that are currently happening keep going, will we have the capacity we need? But he's certainly talking like a man who's putting together his war plan and war cabinet. There's a threat that the president's going to announce tariffs or penalties on China for intellectual property theft. We saw the president of the Tom Donahue, president of the Chamber of Commerce, basically coming out today and saying that's please don't do that. Of course, Europe is struggling with the impact of the tariffs and sort of Trump's what can I say? Sort of bombastic way of doing things. So, and of course, they got hit. They're going to get hit hard by the repatriation and the drop in the tax rates. Anyway, as I said, interest rates have been rising. Now we saw the fixed income market sort of perk up and do a little bit better this week, but LIBOR continues to go up. And in the notes, I put the LIBOR rates, and what you can see is relative to a year ago, 3 to 6 month LIBOR is up about 100 basis points. Now, remember, I've always said stock market can digest 150 basis points a year in increases, but you get more than that, you start to get things iffy. Now, what's interesting is on the long end, the 20-year bond index has come down a little bit. The Fannie Mae's up a little bit, so the mortgage rates are higher. But as we see this week, the rise in Treasury interest rates backed off a little bit. I think part of the reason you have the sort of saber rattling is, of course, saber rattling means more arms sales for everybody. But this week we really turned out to make the Russians the boogeyman. There's tremendous effort between allegations regarding a poisoning of a ex-Russian spy in Britain, with Britain taking the lead on putting more sanctions and now Mueller subpoenaing the Trump Organization over questions with Russia. If you're gonna get Trump on doing business with the Russians, you're gonna do it at the Trump Organization, not during the campaign, is what I think. And then finally, you have the Treasury putting sanctions on and sort of mouthing the interference in the election. And if you look at what the Brits are saying, if you look at what we're saying, it's so weak. It's almost embarrassing. And of course, this is coming right before the March 18th elections for president. So Putin is running, and with a 80-90% approval rating, he's expected to win. But you notice we're talking about the Putin boogeyman. We're not talking about the fact that $21 trillion is missing from the federal government, and our pension funds are financing with treasury bonds and buying the treasury bonds that are financing that $21 trillion that's disappearing. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the Putin boogeyman. And I think one of the things that's creating the problem with Russia is we do need a boogeyman, because you basically have a national security state, which is not economic. It makes money by doing things that cause a negative return on investment. And, you know, it's hungry and it keeps eating its way around the planet. We also have a flow problem. The Bretton Woods system that grew up after, or that was designed by the U.S. and implemented and policed by the U.S. after World War II, really was power through managing the flows. And now with the build-out of the Silk Road and China trying to assert dominance in the South China Sea, and the yuan petrol trade coming out this month, you really have major, major competition for flow. Major competition, and that's why there's been such a fight to assert hegemony on the Silk Road, and of course Iran is smack in the middle of all of that, and it's one of the reasons Iran is very much on the map, and all of course that flow is all the trade flow, whether it's the South China Sea, the sea lanes, or the Silk Road. Is all part of who controls the global reserve currency. And it may be one of the reasons the Anglo-American alliance is acting so weird. And then finally, there's a model problem. So China and Russia are threatening the flow problem, but they're also threatening the model problem, which is we now see Russia exporting more food than weapons. They were always the number two exporter of weapons after the United States, who's the global leader. Now they're really beefing up their food industry. I'm going to talk a lot more with Farrell about it during the news trends and stories discussion during the wrap-up. But that GMO model, which is not, I would say, is not big yet, but if it grows, it could threaten, you know, you have pushback against GMOs globally. And if Russia really adopts it and promotes it, it could threaten big pharma. It could threaten many different things. It threatens the whole model. So Putin's messing with the model. And finally, if you look at what he's announced on all these weapons, I have no idea what the Russians are planning in terms of exports. But if they start exporting those weapons, they could turn into the number one weapons manufacturer if they're as good as they say they are. So whether it's food or weapons or the fundamental model, big, big problem. Now, as I said, Russian sanctions laid on this week by Treasury and the Brits. The Brits throw out 23 Russian diplomats, even after May said that the poisoning was likely the Russian. She didn't even have the gumption to lie and say it was definitely the Russians, because, in fact, you couldn't prove it. And if you look at what the Russians came back with in terms of what the procedures are when you're accused of something like this, of course, the Brits aren't following it. So it really does look sort of cooked up and made up. I should note Wilkerson will be on at the end of the month, so I'm looking forward to talking with him about this and what's really going on. You know, nobody's more critical of the neocon strategy than Wilkerson, unless it's Saker. And, of course, Saker will be on, on again in a month and a half, so I'm looking forward to that. The big Financial Times headline tonight, NATO powers close ranks against Putin, saying that Paris and Berlin are joining with the Trump sanctions and UK to blame Russia. In the meantime, Russia's trying to issue 7 billion in euro bonds. So this is coming right when they're trying to access $7 billion. I'm sure it's not a coincidence. And of course, the Russian elections are March 18th. So they're running a real, imagine doing this to, I mean, you know, we're all complaining that the Russians interfering in our elections. For everybody to pile and do this, you know, 2 days before the Russian elections, that's a major interference in the Russian elections. there is also a split. I don't know how much this is contributing tension in OPEC. Iran's wanting to keep the price at 60, Saudi Arabia is trying to get it up at 70, so more cash flow tension there. And of course, we just saw, as I talked about last week, Xi Jinping did get the term limits lifted, so he's the leader of China indefinitely. We're back to indefinite terms. So we have a new, I don't know what you want to call him, a new Mao, so to speak, running China, which gives China tremendous stability in central leadership, which is going to be potentially a tremendous strategic advantage in this kind of environment. But one of the things the National Congress also announced was their military budget up 8%. So as we can see, the commitment to war spending is going up around the globe, and when you throw space in, it's really going up. So the question is, the Anglo-American alliance losing controls of the flows on the Silk Road in the South China Sea and in the financial markets, and that threatens the model and particularly the reserve currency. And so, how aggressive will they get? And of course, with the neocons right in there in Israel wanting to, as part of this, go to war with Iran, it's a very dangerous situation. Now, what you see happening, and this is contributing to the sense of batten down the hatches and the insecurity, is real turnover in the Trump administration. We've had 24 departures in 420 days, and I do believe that's a record. As I discussed last week, Cohen was out. Interestingly enough, the Wall Street Journal then informed Blankfein. Remember, Cohen and Blankfein, if you go back and read my old posts on Goldman Sachs, Goldman Whack-A-Mole, and a couple of others related to that, Cohen and Blankfein came up together. They're basically tied at the hip. So Cohen resigns from the White House, and then the Wall Street Journal informs, announces that Blankfein is leaving by the end of the year, and then Blankfein confesses that he read about it in the Wall Street Journal. He didn't know he was leaving. So what you're seeing with Blankfein and Cohen out is the engineers, the traders who engineered the financial coup d'etat and the housing bubble from Wall Street, and that is really the end of an era. And they're bringing in a relationship banker. So traders out, relationship bankers in. If there's any message that the financial coup is over, there it is. Quite astonishing. But of course, the big out this week was Tillerson out, handled exceptionally poorly. One of his deputies, who then got fired, implied that Tillerson learned it from a tweet. It has looked to me like the neocons have been after Tillerson from the time he arrived in town. And there's no doubt that Tillerson and Mattis were a force pushing back against the neocon strategy in many different respects. They persuaded him to stay in the Iran deal. They convinced him to support NATO. And in fact, if you Craig Murray has been writing some great articles. Murray is the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, who has interceded on the WikiLeaks and Seth Rich issue. And I've sent those links. Those links have been posted in Geopolitics on the website. So if you go to News Trends and Stories, you'll find it. Or just go to Greg Murray's website. But one of the things he pointed out was that Tillerson was the one who really prevented the Saudis from invading Qatar. And to the massive disappointment of the Israelis. And I just think they've been gunning for him from the day he walked in. And of course, he also had to deal taking over State Department with all the Hillary Clinton backbiting and sort of her and Obama staffing at the State Department. Anyway, but part of the problem was he never, I don't know, he and Trump just didn't build a rapport. So he's out, and it's too bad because he's one of the true adults in the room. I'm a fan of Tillerson, and I always get yelled at by Saker for that. Anyway, there was a rumor tonight, Washington Post published that McMaster was out, and subsequent to them posting that, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders denied it, said she had talked to McMaster and POTUS. It just wasn't true. If you look at the lower levels, very recently we've had Hope Hicks out, Rob Porter out, another one of Trump's assistants out this week on a security check background. And there's no doubt that somebody's running a slow molasses on security checks and background checks. And then the Democrats are holding up and slowing down lots of approvals. So, Trump does not have his team in place, and that's very, very frustrating. Larry Kudlow has been announced as Cohen's replacement for the chief economic advisor. Kudlow has, oddly enough, it was at my birthday party at the Rainbow Room that Kudlow first tried to persuade a whole bunch of my friends that I should go interview with Jack Kemp for a post at HUD. Anyway, but Kudlow, after he left government, went into doing TV, doing sort of being a TV economist. So he's a guy who sort of manages information flow, where Cohen was very much a deal flow and Tillerson was, you know, a real stuff flow. So if you look at the contacts and depth of the risk management that Cohen and Tillerson are experienced at, you know, it's much, much more significant and deep than Kudlow. So it's a real switch and fits with Trump being a TV guy and having somebody who's sort of in a TV model. Problem is, you know, you're sitting atop of a deal flow and a real thing flow, which is the most significant in the world. There are significant rumors regarding Sessions. It wouldn't surprise me if the neocons are going after Sessions too. So there's a real effort, to unhinge Trump. Now, one of the things Trump is saying is, you know, I've been in here for a year and now I kind of know who I want and who I need. What he's saying is, you know, I treated the presidency like an entry-level position. And it's true, neither he or Tillerson had government experience, which was part of what I think caused the problem. He wants to shift Mike Pompeo, who's over at State, to CIA. Pompeo is much more neocon friendly, but Pompeo has been giving him the daily briefings, the CIA briefings, and seems to have created a much closer rapport with the president, which is what you need over at State. Senator Rand Paul came out and announced that he would impose Pompeo for State. He opposed him for CIA. And his deputy, Gina Haspel, for DCIA. And Haspel's resume is very shrouded because she spent most of her time in covert operations, so it's hard to know a lot about her because she's been at the CIA for many decades. Rand Paul was very opposed to her being the deputy, is what I believe happened. But the one thing she's known for publicly is leadership of torture, and according to former CIA employees, those were tortures where murder occurred with parties who were believed to be innocent. So she has quite a reputation on the torture issue, which has been very, the black sites all over the world have been very much an issue. If you haven't watched the Waraker trilogy, I would encourage you to do so. Anyway, the Republicans are now at 51-49, with Pence being able to do a tie vote. So with Senator Paul coming out against Pompeo and Haspel, the question is, where will the Democrats? It looks like the Democrat leadership is supportive of Haspel going to DCIA, which is kind of interesting. So it'll be interesting to see if we get any swing in the Republicans and if the Democrat leadership opposes it. Now, Trump is right. He needs people he's comfortable with. It's very hard for me to describe how horrible a position he's in. If you're the president of the United States, you're responsible for everything. But you are surrounded by people, it's like herding cats, who have their own agendas and are really interested in toll boothing to get more power and money. Everybody's looking to, it's what the congressman said who went out to make his vote when the bell rang to call him to an appropriation. He said, let's face it, honey. I was sitting there with him at dinner and he says, let's face it, honey, I'm only here to protect my shit. But everybody's kind of, you know, what about me? What about me? And it can be horribly, horribly frustrating. One of the things I saw, I worked for a secretary who was very emotionally unstable. In fact, the White House used to call me and ask me if I'd seen, or they used to have people call me and ask me if I'd seen Kemp have any psychotic episodes. So the word was kind of out about his instability. But anytime he would get wildly frustrated with he had trouble dealing with the complexity of the operation he was being asked to run. He'd been a congressman, never been responsible for operations. You know, he'd played football and he'd been a congressman. So, you talk and you get a headline and then you write something and you move on. You're not responsible to implement tricky, complex, and risky operations in a complex world. Anyway, so whenever he'd get frustrated, he would literally it was like a physical, emotional, demonic possession need to fire, kill, or destroy someone. It was amazing. And he'd destroy somebody and then he'd feel good for about a week and then he'd be out looking for somebody else to destroy. And you almost worry that the frustration and the isolation that Trump is experiencing isn't getting him to fall into that trap. Anyway, but I think it is true that he has learned a lot about what he needs in different kinds of positions. And let's see, if he reorganizes, will he get it? Now, the problem is I think the neocons are lobbying and pushing hard and having an effect. And the problem is, you know, he's swinging in that direction. And that's why I think what Rand Paul wrote is so important. I also think he's scared. Mueller subpoenaed the Trump Organization in the Russian probe. And, you know, if they start going into his finances pre the campaign, they're going to find a lot of Russian money. And they can certainly, they're not going to find any interference on the campaign, but they can certainly make crazy with his finances if they want to. And it is way outside, in my opinion, the scope of Mueller's mandate, and for Sessions to allow this to happen, as far as I'm concerned, is malpractice. There are only three governors at the Federal Reserve. The administration is talking about taking Randall Quarles, who's also a Carlyle partner, as is the new chairman, Powell. If they're talking about appointing him to the Financial Stability Board, which is the body that oversees international financial regulation. If they do, they're only going to be the chairman and one other governor at the Federal Reserve. So for there to be only two of seven positions filled is remarkable. And again, more instability and security. There are constant rumors these days about the giant reset. You know, we're waiting for Godot. And the idea is, you know, you're going to get a giant reset of valuations. Whether it's the giant reset and the collapse of the dollar or the giant reset, the dollar flies up because no one else can pay their dollar debts, on and on and on. There are many versions. I wouldn't hold your breath and wait for Godot. This is really, this is a every day, 365 days a year, turtle through. But there's no doubt that the global economy is likely going to have all sorts of different corrections, whether it's from trade wars. The big one is rising interest rates. You're going to have shakeouts on all sorts of people with big debt who are not going to be able to handle their debt. The other reality is we're dealing with lawlessness and corruption and just too much financial addiction to war and too much financial addiction to things which are illegal. It's funny, The Economist has just been going ballistic, attacking Trump for violating and destroying the rules-based system. But I got news for you. It was the global financial coup d'etat and the bailouts that destroyed the rule-based system. They destroyed the rule-based system a long time before Trump did. Trump just came along and just pointed out what hypocrites they are, and he's absolutely right about that. So, it's really the pot calling the kettle black, and you kind of wonder where they get their hubris. But it leaves Trump basically trying to keep a global flow model going through force. He even mentioned this week the idea of a space corps, just like the Air Force, or was it? Yeah, Space Corps. I don't see how you keep a global flow model going through force. The tighter you try and control, the more it just slips through your hands. So it's a tricky position to be in, and it's a lonely position to be in. And certainly, he's a temperamental guy, but everybody's trying to make him look way more temperamental and make way more crazy than he is. What we all need to remember is my old line from one of my colleagues at HUD, in the destruction of the old, let there be the creation of the new. We just need to be building the new every day in every way. One of my other favorite quotes you've heard many times is from Leonard Cohen. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So as things fall apart, you want to lead through the cracks. So if we don't build it, it won't happen. I had a great talk with Thomas Meyer when I was in Basel, and one of the things he talked about is how we have to find each other and build the kind of networks and leadership that can lead through these things as the change comes. But it's accelerating, so batten down the hatches. There are going to be plenty of storms. It's wild now, but it's going to get more wild. Money and markets. U.S. dollar now down 2.33% for the year. We've been swinging around between 86 and 91. So the question is, I still wouldn't say we've broken the 92 line, but it's not holding. Given the trade wars going on and given how much a lot of players have in dollar debts, that's a lot of potential strength underneath the dollar. But as I said, once you break the 92 line, it could be a straight shot down to 80. So let's just see what happens. Fixed income has turned up this week. So the rise in interest rates backed off. The long treasury now down 4.83% for the year. So that's cut the worst point in half. The intermediate treasury down to a little bit more than 2.5%. The bond aggregate ETF down almost 2%. And junk negative 1.3%. People have real reason to worry about lower quality retail. Bitcoin also looks like it's breaking down. We have to see what happens. It's now trading below 9,000. But it could, if it passes through its 200-day moving line, we could be in for a breakdown. Certainly, if you look at how regulators are chewing it down, we saw the Carney from the Bank of England chewing it down on the radio or on Bloomberg the other day. Was it Bloomberg on some news show? But you see regulators all around the world sort of chewing it down. Equities, the S&P up 3% for the year, so it's coming back. And I keep waiting for that big correction, but it hasn't happened. Tax reform, it looks like a lot of the corporate money is going again towards stock purchases. That gives some people a problem. I don't. It puts money back out in investors' hands, and they go around and invest in new things or things that need capital. Problem is some of those companies have pension funds they're stiffing, and it's not good to see them buying back stock when they're stiffing their pension funds. The home builders hurting from the sort of jump up in mortgage rates. So they're down 6.5% this year. The Europe ETF flat, Germany down one, a little bit more than 1%, developed world up 30 basis points. So essentially flat. China large caps up 6% for the year. China small caps up a little, about 6.25%. And emerging markets up a little bit more than 4.5%. And the commodity index essentially flat now for the year. Gold up 1%, silver down 3.38%, and oil up 3.67%. So whether it's interest rates backing down a little bit or commodities backing down a little bit, looks like a little ease up on inflation here. The U.S. vetoed the Broadcom deal for Qualcomm. Qualcomm is the leader on 5G, competing with one of the Chinese companies on 5G. And they took the position, both the president and advisors, on grounds of national security. That's because 5G is absolutely essential to the Internet of Things and absolutely essential to top-down control. Must read. I published a book review of Alana Freeland's Under an Ionized Sky. I strongly recommend you read the book review, and I strongly recommend you get the book because it will bring together all the different technologies that produce weather warfare and a lot of the really crazy things going on. And it gets back to the control of the low level and the suborbital platform. I think one of the reasons we are feeling threatened by Russia is, remember, they're still the only country with a competing GIS global satellite system. And remember, they were the first to get the satellites up with Sputnik, not the U.S. So they've always been a leader in space, and it's quite amazing what Putin's been able to do in terms of both military and space, given what he had to work with when he first came into the leadership of Russia. Anyway, please read A Lot of Freelance Under an Ionized Sky. It's a very, very important book and a very major contribution to understanding why our world seems so nuts. 2018 campaign in the United States is going to be very important this year. And it's real trench warfare. We just had a special election in Pennsylvania. A young Democrat won by literally a few hundred votes. Now, it's interesting because you had a Libertarian run who got 1,380-something votes, I think 1,386, which was enough to swing it away from the Republican into the Democrats. It just shows you how a tiny Libertarian can be a major stinker. If the Libertarian had been out of the race, the Republican would probably have won. Republican hasn't conceded. He's waiting for the absentee ballots, but it looks like the Democrat has it. Interestingly enough, the Democrat adopted a lot of the Trump policies. It was, and in Pennsylvania, the steel and aluminum tariffs you would have thought would help, but the Democrat was very supportive of them. Now, this was a congressional district that Trump took by 20 points during the presidential campaign. So to lose to the Democrats is a real sting. There's all sorts of second guessing about what it means. But what it tells me is that these campaigns are going to be trench warfare, and their issues are going to be important. And we saw one article last week. You can find it in News Trends and Stories. It's Hilary. About how many ex-CIA officers and employees are being run as Democratic candidates. And if there's any proof that it's trench warfare, it's that. I've had too many experiences with CIA employees coming and explaining to me, three or four years ahead of time that George W. Bush is going to be the president and here's what his issues are going to be. And you realize who's running the country. Anyway, keep that in mind, and I would say pay attention to who's running for state, local, and federal offices in your area. It's an opportunity to change things, and it's also an opportunity to go and say, why are pension funds and all these different institutions financing a federal government that is then disappearing the money, and where's our $21 trillion? We want it back. Clinton Foundation, you have investigations in states, in countries, and the FBI doing investigations, and you wonder what's up. Unbelievable rumors, but people are getting much more aggressive about talking about the Clinton crimes. There was one discussion on Fox News the other day that shocked me because they were basically saying there's a very strong indication of a basis for a criminal indictment. So people are feeling confident in talking about that, and that's a real change in tone. So I'm going to be interested to see, and I keep watching it, because that had to have been the mother lode of all payola networks and control file networks. And if the truth of the Wiener laptop ever comes out, it's going to get quite nasty. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's one of the reasons things have become so nasty in the last couple of weeks. Abe in Japan has got scandals of his own and purges of his own, so it's interesting to see potential turnover there. The Italians are sorting out how to pull together a government in the aftermath of the election, and now we have Steve Bannon over in France campaigning with Le Pen. So there's turnover and reshuffling of the decks everywhere, certainly throughout the G7, which makes it very interesting. Our hero this week is yet again the Hilary team, who have done an incredible job of what we've been up to in the last 3 weeks. And it's been very exciting for us to work on the new website together instead of working on when your teams are split between two websites. I had no idea how frustrating it was. And now that we're all organized and focused on one site, it's wonderful. Anyway, but you all know the story of W.C. Fields' joke about trying to sell snake potion, and and saying the way he does it is by carrying a snake with him. We've seen the snake in the snake potion in the marketing of cybersecurity in several respects, but the cutest story was we had a wonderful gentleman, sounded like a wonderful guy, right, said, I heard on Craig Hunter about your being hacked. He said, you know, I work for AT&T, and I'm philosophically very interested in, I believe in Austrian economics. We have a lot in common. And here at AT&T, we offer complete cybersecurity, and we could do a whole website for you and really economic, blah, 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 blah. And I wrote him, I said, well, that's really great, but one of our problems is AT&T keeps blacklisting our emails, and we're going to have to go to our subscribers and tell them, please, would you leave AT&T and go get an email from someone that other than a big corporation. We had similar problems with Google and Yahoo, but if you write them, they'll pull you off your black. If they have no basis to put you on a blacklist, it's hard for them to justify, but you have to play, you have to go back around and around with them. Anyway, but so this guy checks with his technical people and he says, we've checked our list. You're not on any blacklist. And so we sent him the, we sent him all the documentation and said, well, you know, it must be your super secret political proprietary. But, you know, we're not interested in the snake potion if you keep sticking the snake on us. It was kind of funny. But I wonder whether it is possible to finally integrate what we know about these different large corporations, because so much of their marketing is snake and snake potion. It's so shocking and amazing. And that's why I beg you, please, you are not safe if you depend on these guys, whether it's for your banking or your email. For God's sakes, get away from them, please. Not for my sake, because we have workarounds. If you still use AT&T email, we have workarounds to mail to you. But I just don't think you're safe in these companies. Anyway, so speech over. Let's go to the movies. I've been watching a TV series. As you know, I don't own a TV. I don't watch TV. But when these things get republished with Netflix, you know, or some of the online services, I'll see them. And I am a huge fan of Ridley and Tony Scott. Tony Scott passing a couple years ago. Ridley still running their production company, Scott Free. And I rarely see anything that Tony Scott did or Ridley Scott does that I don't absolutely love. Tony, of course, made my all-time favorite, Enemy of the State. Ridley made my favorite movie ever, The Gladiator, and other favorites. A good year. Scott Free is producing this TV series called The Good Fight. It is a sequel to The Good Wife, which I never watched. Same writers. It's a story of an attorney who has to come back after being wiped out by a Madoff fraud. And I swear they're using Helen Chapman's life to write this thing. I'm tempted to email Helen and say, do you know that somebody made a TV series about you and your life? Helen Chapman, of course, being the attorney who's given J.P. Morgan Chase a run for their money for their leadership of the Madoff fraud. Madoff fraud, as far as I'm concerned, was not Madoff. It was J.P. Morgan Chase. If you haven't listened to our interview with Helen Chapman, it's a mind blower. She's an amazing, amazing person, and has a book called J.P. Madoff and a great website with lots of information about the various schemes and fraud of J.P. Morgan Chase. Anyway, but this is a legal drama, and it describes the power and importance of the law, and it shows you, there are a couple of different parts and scenes where it shows you how immoral a society can become when the Department of Justice is you combine their powers with absolutely sleazy and corrupt attorneys, which is one of the things you see in the first season. I'm just watching the second season now. Anyway, but it's if you're interested in sort of law and legal issues and sort of legal dramas, it's quite well done and quite entertaining and just a sort of great entertainment, but goes into the deeper issues that we're all struggling with. I said in my write-up of it in the commentary. This entertaining legal drama describes the power and importance of the law in a society struggling with immorality, corruption, and change. Sound familiar? All the attorneys, and including the protagonist, are all big Democrats and in a complete state of shock over the Trump victory, and you work through with them all the issues about it, but it's very charming and very funny. And one of the things I find very disturbing is the different you run into too many people who are on one side or the other of Trump, and each one of them behaves in cult-like ways, and it's very disturbing. And these people don't. Interestingly, the attorney, who's a white woman, ends up at a African-American firm, and there's one African-American partner who's voted for Trump. and you see the back and forth between the sort of all Clinton voters and this one Trump guy, and it's pretty funny. Anyway, but they make it charming, and they don't behave like cult-like people. It's great. So The Good Fight, I recommend it if you like legal dramas. It's very well done. Okay, School Shooting with John Rappaport. As you know, I have never seen a mass school shooting I didn't think was a false flag of one kind or the other. And it's difficult to figure out what is really going on with these things, because once you start to try and work out what happened, it's very hard to get good information, and it can end up being it can take years of a full-time job to just try and get to the bottom of it. We saw this week the judge, one of the judges ordered the Parkland video release that showed the deputy sheriff arriving and just standing outside while the shooting's going on. Now, one fairly sophisticated commentary said that he suspected that the deputy sheriff had been ordered. He may not go into the school without having a camera on him, and he didn't. So he followed orders and didn't go in. But the question is, why is the deputy sheriff waiting for the shooting to be over inside the school before he does anything? Very good question. There's so many questions in the Parkland school shooting. It's so easy to prove that the official story is just a bunch of bunk. And if you look at the extent to which it's being used to justify more gun control, the push for gun control is off the charts. And that's very concerning for many reasons. But one of the reasons is it tells me that they feel, sort of the neocons are pushing for global war, are also pushing for sufficient control of the general population so they can start to slash all sorts of retirement savings. So whether it's slashing Social Security or slashing Medicare, sort of cutting benefits on pension funds or grabbing more money out of the pension funds to finance their wars. My concern is that it's not about guns. It's about money and getting control of the money. One of the things that's interesting, one allegation, and I have no opinion on it, is that the Smith-Mundt bill, which was passed and gave the State Department money and authority to, or authorization to do covert operations in the United States, that there's a direct correlation between when that went into effect and when the mass shootings, school shootings began. Pompeo, if he remember CIA state, have traditionally, the covert side of CIA state, have been the most involved with DOJ in the global money laundering, whether it's narcotics trafficking or anything else. So for Pompeo to control state and their covert budget while his deputy controls CIA, of course the big question is, what policies is he going to have? Now, I know Binney at one point met with Pompeo, and one question I have is, what does Binney think of this? I'm very curious to know. So I'm going to be looking for that. Anyway, so what we see in the news this week is tremendous, tremendous. The state of the world is remarkably fluid. Ask Catherine. We have a few questions. Catherine, what led me to you I could only call faith. I found your Salieri report to be the best source of information I've ever come across. I've read and listened to your entire library that's available, and of course I have nothing but questions. I went to school for political science. I wanted to get to the root of money and understand why some are broke while others have everything, yet it's a normal. I ran political parties and heated debates, but nothing hit me more than when I did my own research and asked one thing in economics that no one seemed to care about. What about the balance sheet? I can tell you're really smart. Because that's where it all breaks down. That's where all the official stories turn into lies if you try and make sense of the balance sheet. So good for you. That question I asked 5 years ago has led me down a rabbit hole that eventually ended me up here. I have to say my biggest fear understanding all this and still wanting to do politics is that I initially felt afraid to speak out and tell the truth in my community. I eventually got over that when I learned people just don't care. Why should I be known as the conspiracy theory guy just to help a system no one wants me to help? I've met myself with a lot of anger and confusion, but I'm learning how to live in both these worlds. You have to stay in a state of amusement. That's what you have to discover. Finding my balance and truth and fighting for it and living my life. I guess I don't have an exact question yet. Just seeing if you respond to some guy stuck in a small town still asking where $21 trillion went. Ha ha. I want you to know I probably live in a smaller town than you do. The downtown population of Hickory Valley is 152 people and our greater SMSA is 1,200. Anyway, but I know how you feel, and I love that comment that Thomas Meyer made. I made it the quote in my discussion with him. He said, we have to pierce the tunnels of loneliness to find each other. But you do have to stay in a state of amusement. If you come into Hickory Valley, we have a big town mural on the side of the building on the other side of the town commons from me. And it has the quote from Corinthians at the bottom. Whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. Because it's far too Orwellian and bizarre to, you know, to worry about what other people think. I think it's very important to worry that you give energy to other people and you're useful to them. And I think kindness in this environment is very important, because if you look at what people are struggling with, it's just horrible. And it's always amazing to me that they do as well as they do. You know, sometimes if you just look at the subscribers I know and the clients I've known for the last 15 years, they're just amazing. The amount of responsibility they take to take care of their family, their parents, their kids, their grandkids, their community. And if you look, the stresses that they're under and the corruption they've had to deal with and the way they just continue to manage through it. I have a lot of respect for the loads that people are carrying. And I've seen people who just can't take it anymore and sort of break down, particularly where poverty is making life difficult. And, you know, what they're struggling with is amazing. I always said the ultimate punishment, I'd love to take the Clintons in there and the Bushes in that group and you know, put them in a situation where they had to be cleaning ladies at Super 8 Motel for 5 years. And then when it was over, they had to write essays on what is deplorable. Because it's easy to judge people if you don't understand what they're struggling with. And what people in America have been struggling with is just amazing. Someone then sent some great links in from one of my favorite explainers of Bitcoin. And so those will be in the notes if you're interested in sort of, you know, 20 hours of content on Bitcoin. That's very good. Dear Catherine, is it possible to look at the total GDP and get a sense of that when compared with the money supply? And then there's a long question, which I won't read. Again, it'll be in the notes, where basically it's somebody, just as the first gentleman said, you know, let's look at the balance sheet. This one is saying, let's look at the whole flow, whether it's the flow of the economy, mapping out the flow of the GDP, and then mapping out the monetary policy. Very good thing to do. And it's one of the things I was building the tools with Community Wizard and the infrastructure at Hamilton to do. It's a big job to try and do now. If you want to do it, God love you. I'd love to have sort of an open source discussion where we could all share doing something like that. But I think if you have the energy to collect it up and put it together, I'd love to see what you come up with. I think it's a very legitimate exercise. Aloha, Catherine. I love your stuff. I agree that everybody wants honest elections. As blockchain technology becomes more accepted and more people know about it, maybe the people can demand such a basis for honest and accurate election voting. Hard to believe that Windows 2000 is the current basis. Perhaps you can release an issue that addresses options for elections. I know you said digital systems don't have integrity, but what else can we use? Would you take a hard look at blockchain technology? If this is a way to have honest elections, we could get the word out to demand it for our elections. In theory, you know, you could certainly use blockchain to run elections with integrity if you had governance and management with integrity. The problem is digital systems don't have integrity, and so you're going to have really good governance and management. And if they're compromised, then the system can be compromised. So we're back to the issues that I wrote about in Control 101. If you haven't read Control 101, the third quarter wrap-up last year, I strongly recommend it. You know, in theory, you could combine a blockchain with a paper ballot with redundant counters. I've always felt we should ultimately, we could even go to open voting. Probably be better and less, you know, you can only rig it if it's secret balloting. The other problem is we're now, and I discussed this in Control 101, we're increasingly dealing with mind control. And I don't think there's a magic bullet. I think you have to deal with the governance. You have to deal with the management. You have to deal with the digital systems challenges, and you have to deal with the mind control. And I know that sounds like a lot, but you know, I go back to what my pastor used to say: if we can face it, God can fix it. Then somebody said, this was so creepy, I couldn't resist sharing it. YouTube showed me this ad for the business services to Telia, the Swedish state telecom operator, before Greg Hunter's interview with Catherine, the boss's niece, loaded all the customer data to the cloud, and now it's gone. Guess they should have entrusted it to the state. Yeah, this is back to the poison or the snake potion and the snake. Good luck with the new website, and thank you for your hard work. The information you provide has enriched my life. The inspiration, guidance, and comfort you bring is invaluable. I'm so glad you feel that way. So jump on the new website and let us know what you think. Hi, Catherine. Was about ready to subscribe when your site crashed. You can subscribe tomorrow. I get my analysis from your site and from Martin Armstrong. I've been in Southern California since graduating from Cal Berkeley in 71. 2 years were at Yale. Is Trump just goosing his base with California hating? Sure, there is theater and real-world policy issues of immigration. Yes, I smell something more nuanced and Teutonic. The spooks use the high-tech companies to suck up data, but are the Beltway powers worried that the techs are amassing too much power and influence? Did they get the memo that the currency of wealth, influence, and power is shifting? Of course, the banks are calling many of the shots, but they worry, Grok, that something else is emerging. Yes, there is a real message to Silicon Valley. In this election and coming back to them, which is basically, you know, between the black budget transfer of money and technology, you know, the national security state created Silicon Valley and subsidized Silicon Valley. And if they think they're in charge, they got another thing coming. That's kind of the message. But how did it come to be that Elon Musk is our extraterrestrial delivery boy? Oh, yeah, that's right. We defunded NASA for the reasons you explained. Well, here's the thing. I believe that they're trying to get Elon Musk to think space, Mars, space, Mars, space, Mars, so that we keep looking and thinking about space exploration instead of space fence, which is the low level, you know, the inner Earth orbital platform being used to control you. We're going to be writing the first quarter wrap up on the space-based economy. And please read my book review of Freeland's Ionized Sky, and if you like to read books, I would definitely get it. Or you can listen to her interviews about the space fence. It's really interesting that if you look at projections of what the satellite and the suborbital platform will be doing, it will, of course, be doing the Internet of Things, and the big user is driverless cars. It's amazing if you look at the projections of how much demand driverless cars is gonna create for satellites to manage and transmit all that data. Now, The Economist had a big spread on the driverless cars that is really creepy, because one of the things they pointed out, for The Economist to warn you seriously about this, you think, oh, it must really be bad, how you're going to give central control as to who can travel and where they can travel and how far they can travel and how much they can travel. And, you know, it's sort of ultimate totalitarianism when you have the space fence controlling who can get in a car and where they can go. And you realize, oh, this is really creepy. And of course, so their question continues. Then there is the possibility they have been toasting California dry this winter with weather mod. I've seen the sky writing day after day. Then they set up and voila, real clouds and precipitation. Yes, so I think that's happening. Is some cabal at the federal level holding a gun of some kind to California's head? Why? Also to Texas' head, Hurricane Harvey. Interestingly enough, one theory that Jeff Renz had, which I think is interesting, is that they were using droughts to protect California from the Fukushima fallout by basically essentially getting the rain to dump into the ocean before it hit California. And then they continue, keep up the good work. Is there a way to subscribe before your entire site is back up? Let me know. The site should be up tomorrow, so you can always call customer service, and I'll let you know that. All the best to your good health and spiritual fulfillment. I should note, because the site was down, we made the Ask Catherine email public, and so that one question is the subscriber-to-be. Okay, coming up, we have a very exciting lineup. Next week, the food series, Dr. Miguel Altieri, father of modern agroecology, fascinating discussion between Harry and one of the great academic leaders of agriculture that makes sense. An amazing, amazing man. I had the chance to go road tripping with Harry and Altieri in Mexico, meeting with Mexican farmers, and it was one of the great trips. March 29th, more on the national security state and the drumbeats of war with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff to Colin Powell. April 5th, first quarter wrap-up, news, trends, and story part one with Dr. Joseph Farrell. And April 12th, news, trends, and stories part two with Dr. Joseph Farrell. I'm going to go see Joseph and interview him in person. We have so much to talk about, so much to chew through. We're going to be doing the same format we did in the annual wrap-up, which is the top 10 stories in geopolitics and economics and the top 10 stories in culture, science, technology, and space. And then we'll talk about unanswered questions and inspiration. So same format as the annual wrap-up. I'm hoping his pipe organ arrives before we record. I expect it to come in March or April, but if I'm lucky, it'll come before we record, so maybe I can get him to play some tunes. April 9th, we'll have the equity overview for the first quarter wrap-up, and then April 22nd, the space-based economy, more on space. So until next week, the Solari Food Series, and then I'll be talking with you from Mexico. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.